Welcome to Doc Talk. Today's guest was a financial planner until 2007 when she retired from the financial planning arena to follow her original dream of becoming a teacher. So she completed her bachelor's in education in 2009, and then she rolled right into earning a master's degree in special education in 2013. And something very unique, in my opinion, about our guest today is the fact that she earned her EdD in special education, more specifically organizational leadership with an emphasis in special education, in just under 3.5 years. Yes, she started in March of 2015 and completed her dissertation and was granted her doctoral degree in August of 2018 from the Grand Canyon University. So today, our guest is Dr. Lisa Ruttner, and she is going to share with us several ideas, great information. She'll talk to us about what a chair is, and I kind of joke, the two-legged kind versus the four-legged kind, right? She shares her thoughts on when one should seek out an editor, like when you should select one and how best to employ your editor when it comes to preparing your work. And finally, she gives some great advice on how to best balance work, family, and studying all at the same time. She has a young granddaughter, and all throughout her doctoral program, she cared for her granddaughter while her granddaughter's parents were working. So let's listen to hear what Dr. Lisa Ruttner has to share with us today. Welcome to Doc Talk, where we discuss all things doctoral. Been there, done that? Then we want to hear from you. Want to be there? Want to do that? Then this is the place to be. Still trying to figure it all out? Yeah, so am I. So come on, let's do this. Let's venture beyond a master's. Good morning, Dr. Ruttner. I want to thank you for being on the call today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
Of course, of course. So listen, I would like to kind of dig into what brought you to where you are today, and would like to have you, if you would, start by giving me a little bit of your background.
Very briefly, I had advanced designations in financial planning. For many, many years, I was in the financial planning arena. I decided to retire in 2007 because I had worked a long time. And in all honesty, pursue my dream of always wanting to be a teacher and become a teacher. So I had to start my education over, and I returned to college, earned my bachelor's degree, decided one day I'm going to move on and get a master's degree. And it was while I was in my master's degree program that I built relationships with several of my professors. And one of my professors asked me if I would consider earning a doctorate degree. And I was like, no, 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 let me get through my master's degree first. And she said to me, she said, you have the tenacity to do it. You will get your doctorate degree one day. And I walked away and I said, yeah, I don't think so. Okay. I don't know. Years later, I kind of woke up and I said, I think I'll go for my doctorate degree, and started researching schools and looking at what I wanted to accomplish, which led me to Grand Canyon.
Okay.
And from there, I am one of the lucky ones. I actually graduated the entire program from my first course all the way to my dissertation defense in just under 3.5 years.
So not being someone who has gone through a doctoral program herself yet, 3.5 years sounds like quite an achievement. Tell me, how long would it typically take someone? I guess it could vary, but what were you expecting? Or
JCU has it set up that you can finish your degree from the time you walk into the first class in about 3.5 to 4 years. It is designed that way. However, the reality is it takes learners probably close to 5 years to complete it.
Okay.
There's a lot of revisions. A lot of different chairs work very differently with their learners. I got extremely lucky in that I had one of the best chairs ever who literally said to me, she's struggling to keep up with me because if she wanted revisions, she got them the next day. I stayed up and would not stop until I knew within 24 to 48 hours she had my revisions. And that kind of, it's a lot of work. It's very hard. You have to be that focused and dedicated. The reality of it is also that my lifestyle allowed me to be so proactive and work ahead of schedule. I'm a single person, so I didn't have to come home and worry about a husband or worry about children.
Okay.
The only person that took my energy away from me was my granddaughter.
Mm-hmm.
And she learned to, at a young age, she would sit down next to me and pretend to do her schoolwork while I was doing my coursework. So she knew it was time to do schoolwork at a young age. Also, I am a teacher. So the week that I'm off for Thanksgiving, that my dissertation, my coursework, whatever it was that I was working on, became my full-time job. Over Christmas break, the 2 weeks that I'm away from this, from the school campus, that became my full-time job. Over the summer, having 8 weeks off over the summer, I maintained my dissertation work and coursework as another full-time job. So I was putting in those type of hours to my work. And being single without the responsibilities of a family or young children, it enabled me a lot of time to follow through and get the work done.
So it sounds like someone at the master's level saw something in you that you may not have seen in yourself at that point in time, but it caught up with you, and you decided to act on that instructor's prompting and took off from there. That's incredible.
I think they saw a lot more in me. As I graduated with my master's degree on April 27th, and they helped me become an adjunct instructor, and I started working for the university in August of the same year. So I got really lucky with some of my professors who must have seen something. I don't know. I was just being me.
So let me ask you, what you mentioned you got lucky with your chair. What makes a good chair? Is that someone that an individual would select?
We do not get to select our chairs.
Okay.
They're assigned. And working on all the committees that I do work on, and now I'm actually going through Grand Canyon University's chair training and am becoming the chair. Some of the things that really helped me was my chair was a wonderful communicator. If I had a question, I knew I could ask her, and I knew she would help provide me with the direction I needed. Above that, I also knew that I'm very resourceful, and any learner who is pursuing a doctorate degree must be resourceful.
Mm.
And what I mean by being resourceful is you have to be able to go out and take the lead to identify what it is you need in order to complete your degree. I identified several individuals who had graduated from Grand Canyon who were able to help me if I ever had a question or just needed a sounding board. I also had an editor from my very first class, not my dissertation, but my very first class, because scholarly writing is the next level that an individual really needs to increase their ability on. So you have to be resourceful. These are things that a chair does not teach you. You have to go above and beyond and do it. Also, scholarly writing. A chair might give you suggestions, but you have to seek out other resources to help you hit that level of scholarly writing.
So, Dr. Ruttner, what for folks who are listening, can you describe, I'm getting a sense of what a chair is, but could you define what it means to be a chair, the two-legged kind as opposed to the four-legged kind?
I'm not going to sit on the chair. The chair is actually the lead professor in anyone's dissertation.
Okay.
And while the researcher, the learner, is researching for his or her study and then going to conduct the study, there are a lot of different phases that the learner goes through. And at Grand Canyon, they call them milestones. And for each one, it is for the chair to mentor the learner to make sure the learner is successful with accomplishing, meeting, and passing each milestone. And it starts with the prospectus and the approval of the prospectus. It moves to the proposal, which are the first three chapters of the dissertation.
Okay.
It goes through the AQR, which is the academic quality review, and making sure that the learner gets through that process. Then it's going into the IRB process and making sure the learner has the documents and all of the forms filled out correctly so that they could submit and successfully pass IRB before the study could even take place. Then it's conducting the study, writing up your chapter 4 and 5, which are all the results and how you identified the results and how you coded the results and how you report the results. And after, at each juncture, whether it's just approving chapter 1, then you move to chapter 2, and you get chapter 2, and you get chapter 3. Every chair works differently on how they want to see a document. I intend to, when I start becoming a chair at the end of the month of July, I intend to have my learner submit one chapter at a time. Let's fine-tune the chapter. Get it approved, send it to the methodologist, send it to the contact expert. While they're waiting for feedback, we move on to the next chapter. So we're always working in a cycle.
Yeah, that sounds like a really a good way to tackle it. Never having done this before myself, breaking it down into kind of those bite-sized pieces that are chronologically, it sounds like they're chronologically in an order that would make sense and more reasonable in terms of tackling it one chapter at a time. And you talked about having a good editor. Now, would an editor be someone you need from the get-go, or somebody that would come in and kind of review everything midway through at the end?
That's a great question. In my opinion, an editor should be from the get-go. Before I submitted any document to my chair, it was sent to my editor. Because the last thing the chair wants to see in a document are grammatical errors, are mechanical errors. Those type of errors are unacceptable when you are working on a dissertation. There's no reason for those type of errors. And what ends up happening is it prolongs the process. If you turn it into a good editor first, and you continue writing another chapter while the editor's working on a chapter, you're always keeping that cycle moving or the wheel moving forward, but you don't want to submit something to a chair that is just full of errors. I know I intend to look at a writer, a learner's writing, first and foremost, and I will suggest that before I read any document that they have seeked out an editor.
Okay. An editor. Okay, so having an editor take a look at anything before you ever send it to the chair is something you'd highly recommend.
Absolutely.
All right. Let me ask
you.
Go ahead.
Oh, for me, as a content expert, I have read documents where I am so busy correcting grammar errors and mechanical errors that you lose what the meaning of the content. And this is why I always say, go to an editor, because if I have to make all these grammatical corrections and tell you all, you know, within these sentences that there's grammar mistakes, I can't look at the quality of the work then.
Understand. Did you, out of curiosity, were you ever unsure or did you ever question what you'd gotten yourself into when you started your program in organizational leadership?
It's in organizational leadership with an emphasis in special education.
Okay.
I never questioned the special education. That's my passion. I always knew that if I was going to pursue a doctorate degree, just like my master's degree is in special ed, I intended to become the expert in that area. I did question myself and my sanity of doing this, and I questioned it at the very beginning of my program, my very first class, my introduction to doctoral studies. I did not understand the assignment. I did not understand what the expectations were, and I ended up failing that first assignment. And I was pretty much on that ledge, and I was saying, I'm done. I can't even do a first assignment. How am I going to write a dissertation? A dissertation friend of mine and I met for lunch, talked me down. She told me, call the professor, have a conversation with the professor, and see what happens. I did. The professor was very accommodating, was very nice to me, and I successfully passed the class, and the rest just kind of went on from there.
Wow. Wow. Sounds like a really great friend who was able to help you see beyond that initial failure. But oftentimes...
And that's why I say that every dissertation learner needs to have sounding boards, peers that they could cry to, yell at, embrace successes with. But good sounding boards will help them sort out different areas and help them pass whatever that frustration is, get over that hump, and help them transition to the next milestone.
Gotcha. You know, I want to go back to your granddaughter briefly. You mentioned her. I have a little one. I have three kiddos, and the youngest just turned 3 in May. And when I think about trying to get something done at home, especially since we've been at home for quite a bit with the way things are in the world these past several months, I often find myself getting interrupted over and over again. So that's huge to hear that your, at the time, 3-year-old granddaughter was able to sit there and for lengths of time and work as though you were working just like you right by your side without any interruption. So I think that's a testament to her and you.
Well, at the time, she would color in her book or she would read to me and I could tune her out and still continue to work. Now, right now I'm in the chair training program and she talks and I'm still watching her she's dropped off every morning and picked up every afternoon because my son and daughter-in-law are working outside the house full time.
Gotcha.
And she still interrupts me, and now she's seven. And I just look at her, and I say the same thing I did when she was younger. Do you see I'm working? I already answered the question. Go find something to do. Now it's more of I have to direct her to go find something to do. And she's got her own bedroom in my house, loaded with toys and everything. So sometimes she still tries to grab my attention.
Right.
And it's just me being very firm and saying, you better go find something to do.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. So were you, out of curiosity, were you her primary caretaker during the day before you started your program?
Well, me, my son, daughter-in-law all lived together. Mm-hmm. They lived with me in my house. So her and I had a different type of a bond where she, to this day, still believes the nuclear family is a mother, a father, and she calls me Mimi and a Mimi. And whatever's going on, it's the three adults that really are raising her. I was very, very close when we all lived together on a Saturday morning. For whatever the reason is, Mommy and Daddy got to sleep in while she woke me up every morning, and when she was able to get out of bed, and we took turns during the night waking up until she started sleeping through the night.
Right.
Sometimes my daughter-in-law would wake up, sometimes my son would wake up, other times they would wake me up because we were rotating around.
Gotcha. Yeah, I know.
So pretty much, you know, it's always been just the three of us.
Nice. So there, I know that we'll probably have some listeners who have children of various ages as well. And it's good to hear this story about how we manage, I guess, children when we're pursuing, you know, trying to make sure that we give them attention and pursue our goals as well at the same time. So that's good.
I think
good
any
to hear.
Parent that is trying to balance work, children, family, and the whole thing, first off, if they're doing it as a single parent, that is extremely difficult. I'm not going to discourage them. I'm going to encourage them. Keep at it. But talk to your children. Be honest with them. Let them know that you're in school. This is important to you. If you have conversations with your children and you also set up certain play dates with them, they are more inclined to cooperate with you.
That's a great point.
But if you're not setting up these structure and not talking to your children, and they're like, well, I'm hungry, what can I eat? But if you get up and you provide different snacks for them and you make different snacks, like for me with my granddaughter now,
right,
she comes here, I don't have to get her a snack. She's got a cabinet, the bottom shelf. She knows that's where her snacks are. She knows if she wants something out of the refrigerator, she could go into the refrigerator and get something. She's at that age.
Right.
Younger children, I remember as a single parent when I was raising my son as a single parent, and I went out on a Friday night or a Saturday night, and I wanted to sleep in the morning, I would have in the refrigerator a bowl of cereal already in the refrigerator, so he didn't have to worry about how to pour a bowl of cereal. And next to it, I would have a cup of milk.
Okay.
So he didn't necessarily have to wake me up at a particular age. He could go in and get his cereal and milk.
Yes, yes. I like that. I like the encouragement you're offering folks, because setting that time aside for a child or children so that they know, like, you are paying attention to them, but it's dedicated time. And then when it's time to get back to your schoolwork, like, they learn.
They have to be respectful
of your time.
And it's for a parent to have to talk to them about it. Explain to them what's going on. Let them know that this is why you're doing what you're doing.
Right. Setting
Because children are not stupid. They know. They see. But open communication helps the best.
Great advice. Thank you for that.
This is your host, Allison Marchin, and I'm so glad you were here. And I'm looking forward to the next time. Let's do this again.